Welcome to Growth Untold, yeah.
Love it. That's better than what we got right now.
No auto-tune needed.
Welcome to Growth Untold, the podcast, where we dive into thoughtful conversations and insightful discussions with world-class people, all with the aim of inspiring, educating, and empowering our listeners.
We are thrilled to have you here with us on this exciting journey to explore the diverse stories and the ideas that have the power to shape the world for the better.
Welcome to Growth Untold, the podcast. Listeners, today we are sitting down with an artist whose musical journey spans continents and genres. Originating from Lebanon, raised in Sharjah, and now based in Toronto, LA, he began his solo career in the early 2000s with the album Face Behind the Face, earning a Juno Award nomination. His international breakthrough came with the hit single Africa, which topped the Billboard charts at number one in over 20 different countries. A SoCan Award winner and musical force to be reckoned with, our guest continues to shape the global music scene. Join us as we unravel the inspiring journey of artist, songwriter, and producer, Carl Wolf. Welcome, Carl.
What's up, man?
Welcome to the show,
it's
man.
It's so nice to finally meet you in person.
In person.
We've been talking for like a couple of years, and we haven't met in person yet, so I'm so pumped.
And I love, he's like, okay, Carl has a shave head. I got to shave my head today. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, so I didn't
we like your hair, man.
Thanks, man. Did I tell you what this is for?
No.
I just wrapped a film with Julia Stiles directing.
Okay.
Her feature directorial debut.
Okay.
And I won't give away too much, but I had to shave my head for the role.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Actor stuff.
Yeah, actor stuff.
Actor problems.
Exactly. So, dude, I mean, welcome to the show. I love your energy already.
Thank you,
man. I knew that I would. Usually the way we like to do things is we'll get into some specific questions and all that kind of stuff. But before all that, tell me about you. Tell me about your childhood.
So, yeah, I was born in Beirut, Lebanon. When I was 3 years old, we left because of the civil war.
Same here, by the way. 3 years old when we left Egypt.
Crazy. Yeah. And, you know, my dad got a job in Dubai through his brother, my uncle. And you know, we went to school there, graduated high school in Dubai. Yeah, Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, Naeem Bob. You know, it's the same thing. No, it was a great upbringing there in Dubai. We were lucky because what my parents went through, even though, you know, I'm Lebanese and we went through civil war and there's, you know, maybe I was sheltered from it. But I felt it through my parents. I felt it through what they lost. It affects you. It affected my music. It affected everything that I feel. I feel more sensitive than a lot of people due to that. I do visit Lebanon as much as I could. And it was great, though. Dubai, we were sheltered. You know, Dubai was not the Dubai people know today.
Yeah, what year was this? What decade?
It was like in 90... Gosh, I was there in 84... until about 1995.
So it was very different than it is today. It was still kind of growing and coming up because it was Dubai really in the 70s was when it first started.
Late
they found
70s.
Oil and it started kind of growing. So this is early.
Very early. And you know what I'm impressed with? You guys did such like proper research because I was reading, what Pascal was reading, my manager was reading what you guys asked and you guys delved deep into some. I'm like, how do they know that? So why would you know Sharjah, like out of all places? Usually we say Dubai, Sharjah is right. It's 10 minutes north of Dubai.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sort of like the little brother. It's just not as flashy. And, you know, we couldn't afford to live in Dubai at the time, you know, so we lived in Sharjah.
Yeah.
And,
And how long did you stay there? So how many years did you spend there?
I would say about 13 years in Dubai. So I was 3-4 when I got there. I graduated when I was about 16-17.
Okay.
And I came to Canada. I came to Montreal to further my studies. I went to Concordia.
And you studied film, actually?
I did film. I did film studies, Bachelor of Fine Arts. And
We have so much in common. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts.
There you go.
Man.
There you go. It was fun. You know, it was good doing it, but there was something about, you know, sitting in that room watching, you know, these old movies. I was like, man, I remember there was one moment watching the professor just, you know, and looking at him, you know, he's got his Birkenstocks on, he's got his shorts, his shabby hair. I'm like, that's my mentor. Like, that's the guy I'm looking up to right now. And something clicked in me and I'm like, I got to change this up. This is not going to be my life. I want to do something bigger. you know, I know my parents didn't have, you know, a lot of wealth growing up or whatever. So I was like, man, I got to do something big. I'm young. I realized it early. I was like, I'm doing something that's my passion, that I feel in my gut I can win.
You dreamt big. Like you
I
were
dreamt
starting...
big and I did it. And I said, you know what? Watch this. I'm going to do it. And even my parents, you know, Middle Eastern parents, they're like, no, doctor, lawyer, accountant, to the engineer. Those four.
Yeah.
And my brother went. He's a robotics engineer in San Diego. So he's doing really well.
Yeah.
But both of us did really well in our own way. So yeah. it was and I did it my way.
But your parents actually had like a musical knack, right? Your mom was a piano instructor and your dad played a lot of musical instruments as well.
Yeah.
So there's like music in your blood for sure.
It is, definitely. I mean, my mom was a piano teacher. So, you know, there's a thing called ear training when you play piano and go to school for piano. And I did ear training while I was doing homework, because she was teaching people how to play piano. So all day and night, I would just hear the tones and the tunes, and I was just, you know, while I'm trying to study, right? And so I got it naturally that way. My dad played the oud. It's an Arabic banjo, sort of, or a fretless guitar.
Yeah.
And derbeke, and they would have parties, Arabic parties. So you know how school is. We were in a private school. It was a British system. So all my friends were, some of them were expats, some were Canadian-American, British, and the Lebanese, Arabic, Egyptian, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we would listen to hip hop music in school. That's kind of what it was. It was hip hop, the start of, you know, Tupac and all that stuff. And my parents would play all this Arabic music. So I think all that shaped sort of where I was going musically.
Makes so much sense.
But it wasn't obvious at the time. I don't know what drove me to it. I think it was a moment where when I came to North America, I realized, wow, I'm not like Justin Timberlake. I'm not like these guys. Like, I can be the wannabe of them, but you know, Usher's out there. They've lived and breathed American R&B and pop music, Western
right,
pop music.
Right.
I don't have the knowledge yet, you know. So even though I was trying to do it, it was sounding contrived.
Right.
So I was like, man, let me listen to some of my mom's derbeke like CDs and like oud and stuff. And so I just delved deep into it. And that's when I created Butterflies. That was the first sort of Western, Eastern, Middle Eastern song that did anything around the world. And there was message boards at the time. It wasn't internet.
Right.
So people were just going off in Dubai and other Egypt even. I was like, I had a huge following. And you would only know that through certain things like message boards and Facebook at the time.
Yeah.
It was really special.
And did that happen right after you finished film school? Like, what? Take me through what happens after film school. You do film school.
Yeah.
And then you decide, like, I'm going to be a music producer, singer, songwriter. How long did that take
you? It was sort of in the process. It was sort of, you know, while I was going through it, I wondered, you know, what's my future looking like this way? I don't know. You know, it's interesting because a lot of young people don't know what they want to do, right? That's part of, like, there's a general consensus usually is like, you know, even people later on in life are like, I haven't found my calling.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it just, something stuck with me from that teacher. Like, he saved me. Like, looking at him, I'm like, I don't want to be like you.
Right.
That drove me to start looking elsewhere, you know, for.
So you didn't teachers. Always know it was music.
No.
Because you obviously thought it was acting or film or something.
Something. I knew it was entertainment. I love entertaining people on some level, but I did notice that when I would play the piano at a party, while all the jocks were there, every girl would surround me on the piano. And I was like,
I
what?
It.
And all the jocks were like, who's this guy? Little guy, Carl Wolf. Like, I'm like, I don't know. I'm just, and all the girls are just like dreamy and just watching me. I'm like, I've got something here.
Yeah.
So my Lebanese business brain was like,
bro, that's crazy.
Let's
that,
do it.
It's crazy that, like, because me and Alex talk about this, but when you're young and in high school, getting girls' attention is like one of the telltale ways of like, telltale? Is that how you say it? It's
so
fobbing me. Carl's bringing up the fobbing me. I don't know how to speak English. Yeah.
So you can't ask me.
Yeah, right. No. It's one of the ways you're like, oh, shoot, I've got something here. Because I was the same way. I was always afraid to talk to girls in high school.
Right.
You can ask Alex. Yeah. I was just like, I was a nerd.
Yeah.
But when I did school plays,
right.
I remember I did Romeo and Juliet, and I played Mercutio with one of my best friends, God rest his soul. And I remember getting a Facebook message from the girl I had a crush on for like 4 years in high school, and I was always too scared to talk to her. I never spoke to her. It's one of my biggest regrets in high school. She messaged me on Facebook and was like, you were amazing in Romeo and Juliet. Right. This is like what you should be doing. You were incredible, blah, blah, blah. And I remember being like, damn it, I should have messaged her like 3 years ago. We're graduating now. It's too late. Wow. But that was one of the ways that I was like, oh, my God, this is what I'm meant to be doing.
I think that's the way it works, right? The people tell you, I think it works the same way in social media and TikTok and all those platforms today, is the fans will tell you or the numbers will tell you if you're doing something right, you know? So let's say you're doing a skit and if it's not working, the next one. That's the cool thing. Listen, I'm always jumping back and forth here, but something interesting about the new style is that it lets you know if you're on the right track. You know, we didn't have that growing up. So several things I didn't have was an Arabic, you know, North American mentor. We didn't have that growing up.
Yeah.
Myself, Masari, other guys who were doing that. And by the way, we were both coming up at the same time. It was very strange.
Yeah.
So Lebanese Canadian guy making R&B music. Like, you know, I was reading something. Maybe you can help me with this. I was reading something the other day that was saying that that we're the genius, but the genius ideas sometimes come in combinations.
Right. They,
like if I'm thinking of something, someone around the world is thinking the same thing.
Right.
It's happened to me several times.
It's like brainwaves.
Yeah. I've released a single called, for example, Butterflies. Right away that week when it was released, there was another song called Butterflies by someone else and another song by someone else called Butterflies. So three Butterfly songs at the same time.
Right.
And I'm like, come on, guys. What am I just coming up with these ideas? And it's not just coincidence. It's not just like, oh, you're noticing it now.
Yeah.
It's, there is something to that.
Right.
So when we were coming up, maybe we're thinking at the same time, the way the movement of the world, the, you know, politics, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Music and where it's going direction. So Masari and I came out at the same time and people were telling me about him and they were telling him about me and it was
But
just
we didn't
amazing.
Have social media to discover each other.
Correct.
And kind of all that. So what you're saying is now with social media, because I've never thought about it. I struggle with social media too. I'm like, I don't like it. Should I be on it? I don't want to be on it. No, I need it for my brand. I need to be on it. But I think what you're saying is social media, use it as a tool for feedback. It's a
Absolutely.
Feedback tool for
It's an amazing feedback.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Okay. So we're talking about feedback loops and, you know, your whole career. There's a lot of incredible music videos you've done.
Yeah.
You know, amazing singles, multi-platinum singles. But it seems like there's a bit of a change of some of the incredible content you're doing on TikTok and Absolutely. What you're doing. So like how have you... I guess the evolution of the way people consume content is changing and TikTok is massive. Like I saw like a stat that said people use TikTok to research things more than they use Google these days.
Damn.
That's insane.
I'm getting my news from there sometimes.
Right.
You know, and current super news.
That's insane.
So listen, so the way it worked out essentially was, you know, I've been in the business for a long time, longer than many, and I've sustained it somehow, you know. So I've seen it prior to the Napster thing. I was there when CDs were being sold. So we were, you know, I was with a record company when CDs were being sold. We were selling singles. At the time when Africa, there's a huge story about Africa. We have to get into that, the how it came about.
Yeah, please.
But just a quick, you know, Quentin Tarantino back and forth, you know, so CDs, then I remember the labels, the head of the label, Randy Lennox, who was head of Universal at the time. We were on a plane and he was sitting next to me and he was like, what are we gonna do about Napster? They had no idea. The labels were losing their minds. Think about this. They can't sell CDs no more. That's the bread and butter. That's how they invest in artists. If artists cannot be invested in, then they can't be as creative to put the stuff out. It was like a Bermuda Triangle at the time. And then streaming came about. Saved everything because streaming now you could be a member, you pay $9.99, $10, whatever it is, and then it's prorated to each. You know,
and wasn't there like SoundCloud as well? Wasn't that a
SoundCloud was like wasn't yeah it wasn't they weren't monetizing I think on SoundCloud as much
exactly
it was more on
the labels must have hated SoundCloud is what I mean.
I think they hated Napster. That was the main thing. I think SoundCloud created this community of creators that got together more than anything else. But we needed to monetize. It was scary because, you know, if they're not investing, then how are we going to put it out there? You remember, it was the archaic way of working, which is you need a record company to put a, you know, to put marketing, promotion, and then sell CDs and then tours and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now things have shifted completely. You could be, you know, a kid in his bedroom coming up with a smash and writing for, you know, Jason Derulo, for example.
Right.
I mean, Jason Derulo liked one of my songs. I'm not that, you know, but
yeah,
it's you could do anything today. So there are a lot of competitors and it's very congested, but I think the opportunities are incredible, endless. That means anyone can do it right now. And at the time, not anyone can do what we can do. We have to impress the label somehow, you know?
But you seem to like that part of it now. Like it's a positive thing for you. You're viewing it positively.
I think you have to. At some point, you become a dinosaur, you know? And you just like, I never wanted to be that guy. I never wanted to look at the kids today and say, oh, these kids with their stupid hip hop music or whatever they're listening to,
right.
You know, their trap or that, you know, mumble rap or whatever. Every time I catch myself doing it, I'm like, yo, stop. Hey, old man, chill, you know? And so I think I just found a way to circumvent that in my mind and stay youthful and current that way.
I think that's really important, man. Because I mean, streaming is a thing with the acting too. I mean,
right.
The streamers now.
Netflix.
Yeah, we don't get paid residuals, and sometimes I catch myself doing the same thing where I'm like, man, well, if I would have done this before the streamers, I could live off the residuals, and now I can't because you barely make. But you've got to be like, there's pros and cons to everything. So yes, there's more access, but like you said, and you were touching on it, there's more competition.
There's more competition.
Because anyone can kind of do it now. It's like as an actor, if you're really passionate, just go on YouTube and start making skits. You can make a living doing that, you know? Yeah, like you can do that.
Same thing with music.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone can do it. And I love your videos, by the way, where you're like, drop the beat. And you're like, and you're showing people... I don't want to say you're showing people how to do it, but like for me, for someone who doesn't know, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Right. That's how he layers in all the sounds and does all the stuff.
You know what's crazy? That's how it started during the pandemic. So we didn't have concerts. We have no events. What's happening? I'm like, man, let me show people how I produce all my songs. Because every song from Africa to Carrera to Yalla Habibi to all these songs, I produced myself. And people don't know that. You know, I mastered it. I produced Africa, mastered it. Mixed it, you know, recorded it from A to Z. And I don't think people sort of take that for granted, you know?
Right.
When you think of Taylor Swift and you think, you know, some of the greats, do they really produce? They don't, right?
No.
They get a great writer who's amazing. They go in studio, you know, chop. And it, for good reason, because they're great writers and great producers. So they get the top. So essentially, it's also a handicap at some point, because it would be great to work with the greats. But I wasn't there yet, you know what I mean?
It's like Bruno Mars. Isn't that how Bruno Mars started? He was songwriting for other other artists before he blew up.
Absolutely. That's kind of how I got my start too. But it's really interesting. So during the pandemic, I was like, man, let me show people how I make my songs. You know, if I can't be there and I can't, let me maybe behind the scenes, maybe this BTS vibes, you know? and I remember Gary Vee saying something. He was like, education is big on TikTok. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is a form of education. You know, let me show, okay, this is the kick. I remember the first one, I still have it. It was Getaway, my song Getaway. And it became gold. It was a gold record.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like, okay, how hard is it to make a house track? I've never produced a house track in my life. This was the first house track I've done. I'm like, okay, kick, yalla, no problem. 122 BPM, hi-hat. You always hear it. I'm like, and then a bass and then a vocal. Man, it went like 350,000 views. It was my first like, I'm like, are you serious? What's happening here? And then it just took off. I'm like, I called Pascal, my manager. I'm like, Pascal, we got to release this ASAP. Listen, it's moving on there. There's a promotional tool. I feel like TikTok there's something happening.
Right.
Let's monetize it. Since we can't monetize TikTok, let's put it out on Spotify and Apple Music and monetize it. And I'll promote it on there. Freaking worked.
Okay, so you said it went gold. So I don't know anything about gold.
We're
platinum.
Close to gold. We're close. We're okay, about there.
But we'll get it there. We'll get it there with this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you were selling CDs, I understood that. You sold a certain amount of CDs. Yeah. You became a gold or platinum or whatever.
Yes.
How does it work now with streaming? Like, how do you get there?
So there's a formula. It's 150 streams per one iTunes sale. So it used to be, because they figured on average, let's say you bought my song Africa, okay, on iTunes for $1.99 or $1.29, you would on average listen to that in its lifetime with you probably about 150 times. So they kind of said, okay, it's 150 streams per sale. That's it. That's
okay, so every 150 streams is one sale. And then you got to get to a certain amount of sales.
You got to get, like in Canada, it's 40,000 sales.
40,000
sales.
So
make the math on that. It's 150, so 6 million something or whatever in Canada. So the streams have to come from Canadian listeners.
So 40,000 would be what?
40,000 sales.
Would be what? Gold?
Gold.
Okay, and then it goes
80,000 platinum, and then you move from there. Yeah, Africa was four times platinum.
That's insane.
And this
man.
Is during the CD sales time.
Yeah, yeah. Of
okay,
course.
Let me tell you the
so
story.
So tell me what happened. Yeah,
we're going to talk about this.
It's Africa. This is it.
Africa, here we go. Here
and
we go.
I mean, for those of you who don't know Africa, obviously, I grew up on this song. It played everywhere for what felt like years. It was
still playing.
It was absolutely insane. So, yeah, tell us the story about Africa.
Okay, ready? This is a deep dive into the behind the scenes of how Africa came about. From the business perspective, creative perspective, everything. So, I have a good friend of mine in Dubai who we grew up together. He wealthy guy.
In the music industry?
No. Just a friend of mine. His family was in other businesses and things. When we were in college, I remember he went to George Washington. He was George Washington. Right after that, he was like, man, you're starting to do something here with music. I'm hearing some things, you know, butterflies and whatever. Do you want investment? Are you looking at something? I'm like, man, yeah. He's like, okay, put a business plan together. I said, perfect. Got my manager with me at the time, Rabba. We sat down, put a plan together. At the time, Masari was starting to rise with us. Okay. So it was all on my dime. I was paying for everything. So I was working at clubs and whatever, performing. I've only had music as a job in my life, in my career.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, I've never had anything else ever. And I've, you know, so it's really an interesting story. So I was paying for everything. He told me, okay, put a business plan together. I put a business plan together. And what I did was I used sort of the Masari, you know, model. Mm-hmm. So look what's going on now. Now those guys did it differently. They blitzed it. They
right.
said, okay, let's, everything is it's show business, right?
Yep.
Very clever. Cause I was signed with Sal for a little bit. Sal, who's the manager of The Weeknd now.
Yes.
I was signed with them
and
for
Doja
6 months.
Cat
Doja Cat. Yeah. He's an amazing guy.
Sal's, you know, big, and he's Lebanese, Middle Eastern as well.
He's Lebanese. He's great, 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 great guy. And we connected. We had some good times, you know, like we had a good run, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I learned a lot from them, but even starting off in parallel. So I wrote this business plan together. And I sent it to, you know, my business partner later on. And I was like, okay, so here's the thing. Here's the vision for it. We've got, you know, they're doing these numbers. We can do better or the same. You know, Pepsi, Coke, you know, the more they succeed, you got to look at it like, you know,
yeah,
I was
the more
thinking,
because
I remember growing up, it was all Burger King, McDonald's, you know, Pepsi, Coke, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, Christina Aguilera, Britney.
Two sides of one coin.
It's always the same thing, and you should never feel jealous about it. We're always in the music industry, we're all like, oh, this other artist, we got to be better. Dude, let him. He's opening the market for you.
Yes.
You know, my brain is more left and right. I do both. I love both. I love the business side of this industry. Love it. That's why I'm doing the record company now, and I have some artists.
Yeah.
And I love the creative. Like, the creative is crazy, but the business is so much fun. So anyway, built the plan, said, yalla, let's go. He's like, okay, how much money do you need? Whatever. $250,000 it was. Okay. So let's get specifics. Okay. Because this is a really interesting story.
Yeah, I love
story,
it, man. Okay? The more specific, the better. I love it.
So now my dad at the time told me, what kind of deal is this? This is terrible. Because
what would he get for this $250,000?
So he would, wow, we're going deep. I don't know. He would be 50% owner.
Okay.
Of my company, Lone Wolf Entertainment.
Which you still have, by the way.
Which I still have. So okay. I bought him out in time.
Okay.
Okay. So he bought, but he didn't buy it. He lent me $250,000 and bought the company for 50% for a dollar.
Okay.
So, but it was like a
smart,
a loan.
By the way, smart business.
Very smart from his side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I knew at the time, even my dad was telling me, that's not the right thing, Carl. I'm like, but banks won't give me more than 10,000. That's my credit line. That's all I got.
Yeah.
How can I build something? I want to blitz it, man. If we're working, we got to really work.
Yeah.
Dad, you know, who was sort of my business manager at the time.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, let's do it. You know what? I had the feeling it's going to blow up. Like, I just knew it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, do it. Yalla, $250,000 is what we signed. Okay? Yalla, you're my partner, 50-50. No problem. We worked. One single, you know, next. Videos, costly at the time.
Yeah.
70,000. 80,000.
Wow.
We had Lil X, Director X. We went to Jamaica, Cardinal Official. I'm paying for all that. $78,000, $120,000 for
damn,
a video.
That money goes fast.
Bro, you don't make videos like this today. Today, $4,000, $5,000, yalla, you make music.
Because
video.
Everything has gotten cheaper. Correct. With, you could shoot a video on your camera, on exactly. iPhone now. You don't even need to amazing.
Do dude, we're losing our money shooting videos these days. I could do a TikTok, go, you know, 9 million views, and I shoot an actual YouTube video or music video, 150K.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah,
It's a joke now, you know? So anyway. Spend money. Because it's the building. You saw the process. You guys were watching the process.
Yeah.
It was, Africa didn't come out yet. So it was butterflies, the movement, everything bubbling under. We blew $200,000, US dollars. Okay. We're here, but we're marketing. We're building the name. Remember, this is a startup.
Yeah.
And like any startup company.
We've got music videos to show for it and songs to show.
But you
got to
start the brand. Yeah. We got to build the brand. This is how you build it. We've got 50,000 left. This is the tranche I have left. Let's go. He said, no more. He cut me off. He said, no more 50,000. You spent too much. I don't want you to blow everything. It looks like you're just blowing everything. I'm like, dude, I've got this song called Africa. Listen to it. It's amazing. Like, everybody's loving it. He's like, I can't. I can't do it. I'm like, I played it in the clubs. I checked it. I mixed it. I mastered it. It was a smash. In my head, I was listening to it driving around the city. I was like, man, this is a banger. He was like, no, this is not going to work. Like, I can't.
So he didn't give you the full 250?
No. It was stopped at 200 because we had milestones.
Right.
And I didn't achieve some of the milestones.
Right.
And but I'm like, bro, this is it. This is the one, you know, it sounds like
a
guy like, you know, this is it. He's like, yeah, right, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm like, trust me, this is it, whatever. But I just had, listen, I was building it. I had a plan in my mind. Like, this is, you got to build it and build it properly. You can't just have a hit single without the snowball effect.
Of course.
Everything's
yeah.
momentum.
Of course.
And there's momentum being built for Carl Wolf. I looked at it as an entity, you know. Carl Wolf is like
it's a
business,
brand. Yeah,
right,
it's a
right,
brand.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So he wouldn't give me the 50,000. So I had to figure out a way, and I started, you know, I'm like, you know what, man, no problem. I was pissed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I started borrowing money, you know, like from family, from 4,000 here, 5,000.
And what did you need the actual cash for the music video, or no, just to produce the song and the marketing behind it and all that?
To buy the rights. To, you know,
to the original
Toto Africa, right?
Yeah.
I had to buy the rights to it, so there was a fee for it.
Yeah,
shoot the video.
And did they get a percentage on all the sales after? No, it's a one time buyout, and that's what you need the money
no,
for.
No, they take a percentage.
Okay,
so it was a 75%, 75 to them, 25. So they made millions.
Holy,
they did very well, very well. And they actually wrote it in one of the magazines, said that I was their best remake ever. You know,
wow.
And it was a full circle moment. I did meet Toto after that. It was really cool. In years like. 2 years ago.
Wow.
It was
last
15, 16 years
later. He's like, I love you, man. You made me millions of dollars.
We did. It was really cool. Yeah. And so he didn't believe in that it was going to do it. And so I had to borrow money here and there.
Right.
So, and I was stuck, but I had the song. Okay. That was the gold. You know how you work hard for that gold. You know, you dig in, and you finally get that gem. I had it. I went to record companies, every single record company. Universal, Warner, you name it, all the majors.
Yeah.
I went, sat down, you know, cocky young guy. I'm like, yo, trust me, this is the biggest thing. Okay. I shot the video, by the way.
Okay.
I borrowed the money, shot the video, cost me 45,000, and I had 5,000 left. Basically, okay. That was the idea. That 5,000, I was like, okay, let me see what I'm going to do. I had a meeting with the record companies. No one wanted to sign it. Every single record company was like, you know, dance hall, who's doing dance hall on pop radio? Nobody. It's too rhythmic. Whatever rhythmic means. No, you know, you don't have Sean Paul on the record. You have some random guy called Culture. Big shout out to Culture. You know, and who's doing remakes? Only Diddy is doing remakes. You know, it's not going to work. So everyone turned it down. Universal, Warner, Sony, EMI. They're all like, no, 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 no. I was like, come on, man. Are you kidding me? And I'm playing this in the clubs. I'm sending it to DJs. And they're blasting and people are dancing. It was crazy. And so at some point, I'm like...
So you could see firsthand that it resonated with people. Like, people loved it. You saw the end result. That's
I saw the TikTok thing, okay?
Yeah.
Now, we can show you the... I'll show you the association between the TikTok movement, which is me going on the ground, getting the fans, and the gatekeepers, who are the record companies who won't allow it to be heard.
Who
okay?
have no creative taste, who are just business people, who just...
should, though.
Yeah, you they should, but
they should. And so they dropped the ball on that. No problem. I said, I've got $5,000. You know what? I'm going to hire my own radio promoter. So I hired my own radio promoter. He couldn't do anything for a year. He was trying here and there. Finally, in Montreal, it was called... which is Virgin Radio Montreal right now, but it's Mix 96, a guy called Mark Bergman. He put it on Smash or Trash, one of those shows. and against Britney, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, all these guys, Usher, Justin Timberlake. It won 8 nights in a row.
Wow.
Without me knowing. I didn't know. I knew. I found out when it was like the 6th time.
Right.
So I started calling and rallying. We won 8 nights in a row. That's when he officially added it on the station as light rotation. At that point, every single radio station across the country called me personally. And they said, why haven't you sent the song to us? I'm like, you want it? No problem. I sent it off, email to everybody. It became number 32 in the country.
Wow.
On Billboard without any record company. At that point, God rest his soul, Dean Cameron called me that Christmas and said, Carl, do you want a record deal? We feel so bad. We didn't give you the deal. We were off on it. My bad. You know, I was like, 100%. Send me the contract. Sent it to my lawyer. 2 days later, signed the contract. 10 days later, we were the number one song in the country. I sold 15,000 singles every week. Singles.
Wow.
From Africa. It became the biggest song. 42 weeks on the top 3 Billboard charts. 20 different countries. It still plays till this day. It's saved
my
family. I've supported my family for the past 15, 20 years because of this song and what it did to my career. And it's the same single that they all said no to.
Man, that's amazing, man. Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's an amazing story, man. That's an amazing story. It just goes to show you, like, you got to believe what you believe in your bones. You are right. No matter who tells you no, like, you have to follow your instinct. Yeah. You have to follow your gut.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. And you got to push for it.
Yeah. 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 So, because I don't know a lot about the music industry.
Right. Right.
So the fact that you got a record did help propel it to where it went. Like, you felt like you needed that for them to kind of put the gas on the fire.
Yeah, the record deal.
Yes, the record deal.
Because they have the infrastructure.
Absolutely.
To have that, right?
So that was when they said, we'll give you a singles deal and an album deal.
Okay.
And one thing that he did was really cool too. Dean Cameron, you know, he passed away 2 years ago. He was a great mentor as well. And he this was something very, very ballsy of him at the time. So the second single after that was Carrera, which did really well.
Yeah.
And the third single was on the second album after that. And he was like, you know, I was so nervous to put out something that had some Middle Eastern energy in it because right. I'm on radio now. Now all eyes are on me. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, what are the choices of singles? I'm like, this one, Yalla Habibi, and this one. He's like, man, release Yalla Habibi. I'm like, really? On radio? He's like, I'm like, man, people are racist out there. You know, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
You know, Arabic guy. Like, yeah, they're not
gonna
give
it a
chance.
What year was this?
2008.
Yeah, so 9/11 wasn't too far off.
Correct.
Bro, 9/11, I feel like a lot of Arabs don't talk about this, but it really affected us, man. Like, after 9/11, it really affected how people viewed Arabs. And as a young Arab kid in school, like, I felt my life change.
Yeah.
Not in a drastic way, but it was all the little things, the way people viewed you, the way people started thinking, like, oh, you're Arab, so you must be Muslim.
Correct.
You know, they started intertwining all their prejudices together, and it affected us.
By the way, it still lasts to this day.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's starting to change a little bit. I mean, my first professional acting gig was Al-Qaeda number 2 in Nikita.
Wow, there you go.
Like, that was the thing. But you must have felt like, Arab, it's an Arab song.
Exactly.
I'm not really gonna...
I didn't. You know what? We started making... You know, we were covering good ground, you know, and Carl Wolf was starting to penetrate the market.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. I wanted it. I loved the song. I thought it was a smash.
Yeah, you made it, man.
Of course. But you know what? And he told me, he's like, you know what? Put it out. It doesn't matter. If they're racist, they're racist. Be unique and be genuine to who you are. People will see that.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. Those words, man, changed and pioneered music today. Because today you've got an Arab, you know, like East-West music that's blowing up everywhere.
Bro, Nancy Azram is blowing up on TikTok, her songs, and like Shireen is blowing up. It's insane.
They're all touching on that Arabic touch. And I think, I don't want to say it's because of us, but Masari and our thing was part of it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we can't forget that. And so Dean Cameron was really cool for that, and I owe him everything for that moment.
Well, that's amazing.
Can we talk this? Hold on, this whole Africa story is insane, yeah. man. But yeah. we got to back it up a bit.
Sure,
got to back it up to the courtyard moment with Lara.
How do you guys know this,
bro? Listen, Mina and I did
our
digging.
We did our research.
We did our real deep though. Yeah. I don't think I've ever said that. Maybe once.
Okay, well, all right.
It's all Alex. I got to give it to him. He produces the show as well. So
wow.
No, but we got to dig deep here, man, because we went into like before that. Courtyard moment, what was the inspiration?
So Beirut, Lebanon, I went on vacation. I was 10 years old. We, you know, we would go back every summer. You know how we would do that sometimes? Yeah, we'd leave for summers.
So yeah, to go visit the family. And,
visit the family
know.
And things. So there was my grandmother's neighbor's daughter. Super cute. You know, she was older than me. I was 10. She was 12, 13. Was a gorgeous girl, you know? And I was like smitten, like, oh my God, wow. Who's, you know? And I remember the courtyard, like it was a courtyard, just we saw all kids hanging out. And then just her and I, and it was dusking. And it was just, you know, was it dusk or dawn? I can't remember. No, dusking. Yeah, dusking for sure. And Africa was playing in the back. And she sat next to me while all the kids were playing. And she kissed me on my cheek at the same time as, gonna take a lot, drag me. Just like the movies, man. I was like, what is this song?
So that's how it resonated with you.
I understood what that song and those harmonies meant to the heart. I understood it so well that when I was remaking it, I nailed the essence of it.
Right, right.
Because I understood what it did to me. I knew how to remake it.
Does that happen to you a lot where you listen to music and you're like, oh man, if they would have just done this or done that, this would have been it?
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot?
It happens. So some people say that about my music. You know, I have critics everywhere, you know, like friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Who'll be like, yeah, you should be more like The Weeknd, you know? And I'm like, yeah, cool. You know, I get it. Of course, everybody would, you know, I wish I had the hair, you know, all that. Good. I'm not him. I am someone different, and my path is different. Justin Bieber's path is different. Everyone's got a different path in life, you know? And so you got to respect yours. You know, there is a story being told, and I follow my gut instinct on it. Now, people do that, and they try to say, you know, like, oh, like, let's say I show a song to a friend and I'm all excited about it. Something like, it's not, you know, what if you added this or change that? I don't subscribe to that at all, because you're building a sort of a baby. Like that's your baby. Like, how can I say, you know, change the arm of that? You know, I really don't. I just say if it's a smash or not, or I'm feeling it. That's my role in when someone sends me some art.
Right.
I would never say, I can't do it. Now I do it sometimes with my artist because I'm like, okay, we need the chorus to be smash. But I also don't tell her, because I don't know. You know, we don't know. They didn't, the label didn't know about Africa.
Right.
It's
only the artist really feels it, and the artist understands.
Art is interesting that way, right? Like we could listen to a song. I'll give you a quick example. So Omi, the hula, I don't know if you remember the song Cheerleader. Now that I think that I found myself a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So a friend of mine, Jensen.
You could do that all.
Okay, cool. So anyway, Omi's Cheerleader was brought to me by Jensen Vaughn, who's a songwriter with Britney Spears and Madonna, top-notch guy.
Okay.
Called me and said, listen, I want you to listen to this record because they're asking us to do the next single. Well, not us, but him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, but I want you to write it because you're into like dance hall and reggae and pop.
All right.
I think you'd be the right guy. I said, okay. I listened to the song, Cheerleader. I'm like, dude, this is whack. What is this? He's like, Carl, it's number one in the world. I'm like, come on. Come to the studio. We'll make a Arab style. We'll make another better one.
Yeah.
So we came into studio and we. My point is, even at something like that, you know, that's become number one. We don't know. I couldn't tell that that's a hit. You know, I think it's kind of like simple. You know, it's a simple melody, simple thing. How could that be number one? You know, you got to be more intricate sometimes with musicality. But it's not the case, because the way people receive it, you gotta serve people.
And I think it's what you said earlier. You know how you said earlier, there's sometimes something in the water, like something in the universe, correct, where some artist gets an idea and they both get it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like maybe that vibe, like that just came to her.
Yeah.
So she knew that this song, that the world needed this song, that it would rise and it would, because that's what an artist is, like sometimes, you know, like I'll be on set and Dude, this happened with Guy a lot on Aladdin, right, where we would be doing a scene and I would go in and I would be like, ah, the scene kind of needs this line.
Right.
And so there's this one specific scene where I'm taking Jasmine up for the first time up to the abandoned tower where right. Aladdin lives.
Right.
And
that.
There was nothing written for, as soon as they come into his crib, there's nothing written for that. Right. So I was like, I got to add something here. I'm going to be like, welcome to my humble, never mind. Like, right, he doesn't know what to say. Right. And so I did it a couple of takes. And Guy was like, don't say that. Like, what is that? Like, don't do that. It's not the script. I don't know what you're doing. Don't do it.
Right. Like, so it's kind of hurtful, too, to hear that. You're like,
yeah, kind of. But as an actor, you get used to it. Yeah, so I do it two more times because I'm like, I want him to have good coverage on
it. Right, right.
So I do it two more times. And then I do it the way he asked me to do it. I just didn't say anything. Bro, there's probably 5 or 6 moments like that in the movie that make the cut that he told me don't do it. Because I'm like, I feel like it needs it, though. You know, like you're the artist. I'm like, I feel like it needs it. And the nice thing about movies is you don't have to use it.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. I'm going to do it. You don't have to use it.
True.
If in the edit, you're like, what the hell? Just don't use it. No one will ever know.
Is it sort of like, I've never acted on a, like, listen, if we can get into this for a second.
Yeah.
Never acted on a set.
Right.
Is it like you've got some free reign, some like leeway here and there? Or is it like, because I would think a director would want to keep you comfortable. Kind of like when I'm shooting a music video, you want to just, do that. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, do it again. Oh, I like that. Okay, try something different. I like that. Okay, cool. I could live with that. You know,
it depends on the director. And I think unlike music, where music, like you go in the studio and you'll just,
is everything okay out there?
Yeah.
I think it's an earthquake or something happening.
Yeah, right. Just so everybody knows, there's like massive thunder. But
Africa, I bless the rain.
Exactly. Dude, they knew you were coming.
It hasn't rained in Toronto, so this is a perfect.
It's an omen.
Yeah,
it's a positive omen. People are like, Carl and Mina are getting together, and Alex, this is it.
Just these two. There's too much brain power.
Diamond in the rough.
But I in the studio, you can kind of spend all night and there's no time limitation.
Yeah,
on set, it's like every minute costs
money,
money. So, but it depends on the director, to answer your question. Some directors are like, you do your thing, I trust your instinct. And some actors are like, or some directors are really have a specific vision of how they want things. So like, don't do it.
That must be hard.
It's hard, but what my acting coach taught me,
and
she taught me very valuable lessons, one of the best lessons ever, is she's like, you got to do one for you.
Yes.
So, right?
Yes,
so you got, if you have a gut instinct as an actor and you don't do it, you're doing disjustice to your art and to your instinct.
Must be so cool to act.
Like, you must do coolest thing.
Like, I'm watching, man, I was so proud of you, man, just for a second. Like, watching you, I wanted to watch that movie so bad. I took my girlfriend, I was like, man, I want to, I don't know why. I don't know what it was, but I was like, man, I'm so drawn in. It was definitely because, like, your Arabic, I felt connected to that,
Yeah.
Just being next to Will Smith and just killing your lines. And it was so cool to see. Like,
thanks,
it was something
man.
That I would have wanted to do in my life, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks. It was a dream come true. And Aladdin was like,
You did a great job.
The one thing, thank you. It was like the one thing I was like, I was made for this. Yes. I was built for this.
You were
like
made
was,
for this.
Yeah.
So how does that even happen? How do you land? Like, how does serendipity just bring you to that moment right there?
It's just the universe.
Because you look like him.
Yeah.
Like you were meant to be him.
Thanks.
You're the same height as him, as Aladdin.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
It was the universe. I've told this story before, but
you're Africa.
Yeah, it was. It was. I sent in a self-tape. And I had seen online that they were doing this massive casting call for it, so I sent in a tape.
But you're an actor already.
I'm an actor already. I have an agent already. But I'm working at a restaurant and.
But you did some movies here and there.
Yeah, I did some. I'd been acting for, let's say, 6 years professionally,
earning money acting for
6 years. I had just moved to LA.
Right.
So I moved to LA with $15,000. That's all I had.
Right.
And I
for
was
the whole thing
for whatever. I was like, if I run out of money, I'll come back to Toronto and work because I couldn't work in LA except as an actor.
Gotcha. O-1 visa.
So I went to, with $15,000 and I booked a movie, came back to Toronto. I found out that they were doing this worldwide search for him. So I was like, all right, whatever, I'll do. Can you please get me a tape? I want to do a tape. They're like, okay, cool. Here are the taping instructions. Do a tape.
Who's your agent?
Yeah, my agent. Okay. I'm sure there were like 15 different instructions on whatever, because it was everybody. Everybody was sending in a tape for this
thing. I can imagine.
Yeah, everybody wanted to be Aladdin.
Right.
And so
So cool.
I do my tape. I didn't hear anything back for 6 months.
Wow.
So I forgot about it. Genuinely, I forgot about it because as an actor, you train yourself to forget about auditions
when you
do them.
You can't dwell on
it. Because of the heartbreak. You
know?
Because of the heartbreak.
Of course.
So you just train
yourself.
That's
a long time.
Yeah.
You guys have a lot of patience because in the music industry, it's quick gratification, right?
Right.
Like, I make a song, TikTok or performance, concert, everyone's
a little bit, but
it.
I mean, you said you did Africa and it didn't blow up for like a year and a half or more, right?
Yeah,
so
you
sat on it for
a while.
I
did sit on it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Good
and
point.
Again, it was maybe the universe was like, no, the world's not ready
not
yet,
ready for
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I did my tape 6 months, didn't hear anything back. And then randomly 6 months later, I get a call and she's like, you know, that project that you were really interested in. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. She's like, that movie you really wanted. I was like, I have no idea what you're
Was she just playing
doing.
With you?
No, she just genuinely thought I would remember. I was like, this is 6 months ago. I don't know. She's like, Aladdin. I was like, oh, they're still looking for someone that? So I come to find out that my tape had been sitting in the digital bookshelves. The producer saw me on Jack Ryan, which is a show I did with John Krasinski, and they were like, that guy looks Arab. Do we have a tape for him?
Right.
Sure enough, they're like, oh, we have a tape for him. They watch a tape, and they're like, we need to test this guy. So then they flew me to
London.
So
he saw you as well.
Yes.
Because it wasn't just the tape. It wouldn't have done it. He probably saw
the
you at Jack
alone,
Reacher.
The tape alone, they probably would have never seen. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. Everything kind of lined up. They watch a tape. They're like, we need to fly him to London. I flew to London.
So you flew to London.
Yeah.
How was that like? Like Guy Ritchie? Is that?
Guy Ritchie.
Were you like, okay, this is my life.
This is amazing.
Like, this is
listen, at that point, it was enough for me. I was like, because it proved everything to me in that moment. I was like, I knew I would make it. Like, I knew this was right. And I was like, I'm still so young that even if I don't book this, like, it just reaffirms for me
that this
I'm in the right
path.
Place.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm in the right place.
So you went.
Yeah, so I went. I tested. I came back. They flew me out again. They were like, now you have to test again with
How did you
the
test?
Two different
test
Jasmines.
The, oh, okay.
Two different Jasmines. They're like, you got to test with them.
She's
so
British,
I did.
That one, right?
Yeah. Naomi's British, the other one was Indian. From India.
Oh, cool.
Like from India.
Okay.
And they had tested a couple other dudes too, like from, I think it was from the States and from the Netherlands or something. So,
like,
you know, it was a worldwide
like
search.
White guys,
this
like
thing.
Just,
No.
Oh,
Arab guys.
Arab guys. Oh.
Yeah, one was Arab Dutch and I think the other one was Greek.
Right.
Greek American or something.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but this was like a worldwide search thing. So, and then, I booked it and.
But you are Aladdin. So.
Thanks. I
literally are.
He is, man. Right? The laugh, too. The beautiful
they nailed
eyes.
It. They nailed it. You nailed it and they nailed it.
Thank
yes.
you. Yeah, it all came together.
I'm so proud of you for that, man.
Okay, so. Tell me, Africa blows up.
Yeah.
You have hits after, but I don't know what's going on. Can we
that's
hear
not
this?
Just
I hope
regular
can hear
thunder,
this.
Is it?
I haven't heard.
Like,
I literally
like,
haven't heard weather like this.
People have been calling me the whole time I've been here.
Yeah.
I hope everything's okay.
Yeah, you just check. We should check if everything's
be careful.
All right. Because Alex and I talk about this, and there's always the moment after the massive success.
Yeah.
Where you start doubting yourself, you start going, sure. I'll never find that again. I'm a one-hit wonder.
Right.
That was it. That was the peak of my life. That was the peak of my career. Did you ever feel that?
Okay. I don't know whether, I want to agree with you because it seems the humble thing to do. But I don't think I felt that. What I felt was people telling me that. So people, even when Africa was at its peak, I had criticism saying, you're a one-hit wonder.
Right.
Even my second single, one-hit wonder, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, nine gold platinum records, they still say, your Africa's were
was your number one hit.
Because
whatever.
It was so great compared to all the gold. The rest of them are gold or platinum. This one was four times platinum. So it was my opus, I guess you could say.
Okay.
But I never thought of it like that. I'm thinking, man, I'm making a living. I love what I do. I'll do this anyway. So I never looked at it like, the way I saw it was, if I'm too old for this shit, I will just get an artist that, you know, I can you know, produce for. That's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah, so you never let it get to your ego or hit your ego or rub your ego.
I don't think
way.
So, but people try to do that.
Right.
The industry tries to do that. They're like, oh, Carl, you know, like, it's time for the, you know, there's a lot of young artists. I'm like, so?
So is what you're saying, you are just so grateful for being able to just do music for a living that you don't care, or, because it could be both, that you're confident that you're like, I'll get back there. Like, it's all good. Like, it's fine. I'll get back
there. It's a combination. It's a combination of understanding the industry that, especially these days, anything can stick. And, you know, you can have a viral moment being 72.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a viral moment also means money. Mm-hmm. So to me, I look at it like it's so much fun. The whole thing is a challenge. It's been a challenge for me from day one. Being Arabic, coming to this country and fighting an uphill battle, to be honest. You know, I didn't talk about prior to Africa. There was a 10-year thing, you know, yeah. And it was not always easy. There was a lot of like rough things like, oh, he's not a star. He doesn't look like a star. From managers, from, you know, he's not good looking to be an artist, you know, things like that. I would hear hurtful things,
right?
You know, that affected me, you know, in many, many ways. So I just look at it like a challenge every time. And there's people like, you know, Will Smith that inspire me. You know, he's, what is he, 50, 51, 52?
Yeah, yeah. 50?
I mean, the guy keeps going. You know what I mean? I think this is how...
Bryan Cranston didn't really blow up until Breaking Bad, and he was in his 50s. When he was, is that kind of what you mean? You mean that kind of
thing? I think it's more, if you lose the energy and you lose the love, like Chef Ramsay always says, if you lose the passion, you're it's your fault.
Right.
You lose the passion, or you go into drugs, or you go into something, you ruin it.
Right.
But if you don't, you can accomplish anything, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it's just as, I always say this, it's as intelligent as I want to be. You know, if I'm clever with the song and I'm creating the best freaking, can I swear? The best fucking song ever, then what's to say that not everybody's gonna, music is in the soul.
Yeah.
It's not in the physical body. So if I can create a smash and another banger, then it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, whether I get a, you know, a featuring who's a rapper, who's whatever, you know, just keep yourself athletic, obviously, you know, health, nutrition, all that stuff. And you got the energy. Energy is success. So that's kind of how I see it.
The way that I'm taking, like, from just hearing you speak about this, man, you seem like you just got such a passion for the journey itself, man.
Do.
Like, it's like an end in itself activity.
I'm blessed to
not
be
as
alive.
A means to an end, man.
I'm blessed to be here.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I can even do music. I'm a guy from the Middle East. I don't know, you know, I don't take anything for granted. I'm like, pinch me, like, every single day, dude, you know. And I think that's the magic. The magic is, if you lose the passion, people won't believe you no more. Yeah. That's it. I won't do it just for money. I'm not doing it for money. I'm doing it because I fucking love it. And money comes around me that way. And I'm lucky that way. You know, do I want to be Drake, the top dog? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe not. You know, maybe it's too crazy.
Yeah.
You know, his life is too much. You know, maybe. But it's cool to have a lot of money, you know, so that's cool part. But is it cool to be, you know, you can't walk anywhere? I mean, I'm gonna, I don't like to call myself a, you know, like a B-list celebrity, you know, but I've, you know, people recognize me.
You're
everywhere.
In a sweet spot.
I'm in a sweet spot.
Yeah.
It could be a little better, but I don't want to get too much better, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm creating my own, like, things here, you know?
Yeah. And I do think that. I think ultimately you create the life you want just through the visualization and, you know, yeah, you're creating the exact life you want.
Like, if I want to be number one, I probably could be. If I want to really, really be the number one top G, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe you just work towards it every single day. I'm sort of not, I don't want to say content, because content means you don't fight harder for it.
Yeah.
But I'm content in my journey.
Right.
I think the journey and the path is outlined and it's there, and I just have to follow my gut instinct at every turn. And I've always done it, and it's been good for me.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. Mm. I love that. And honestly, you're one of the artists that longevity is a thing too, right?
Absolutely.
You can have a very, like, intense peak, but then dwindle off and die.
Absolutely.
I don't mean, you know, actually.
Sure.
But, you know, and then you can just have a sustained peak. And that's what makes people like Will Smith amazing, is like the sustained peak. You're
absolutely.
Like, holy crap, LeBron James, how do you sustain that? Like, how do you sustain that's insane? But some people have an intense peak and then, you know, that's it.
That's true. I mean, listen, some of these guys are geniuses, you know? They're just like, they're one of a kind, you know, lightning in a bottle. You know, have I looked at myself as lightning in a bottle? No, never.
Yeah.
I see it as I'm just hustling.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Am I good at things? I'm okay. You know, I'm good. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, but I think what the thing is about with me is that it's left brain, right brain. Right. I think that's kind of the zigging zagging. You know, oh, if I'm lacking in the talent part, I'm better in the business part, better than that guy.
Right.
And if I'm better, this guy's better than me in business, I'm more talented than him on music. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of like always a shift like that.
Yeah, you got that's, a nice balance.
Yeah, a nice balance.
Yeah, a nice balance. Wait,
can you walk us through, like, say we're in the studio right now, yeah. Mina, you and I, sure. we're creating a dope track
yeah.
right now. What's your process? Like, just like let's play this out a bit.
Sure. So it would, first of all, I would play, it's either, it depends on the mood. I would play something on the piano and we'll start a melody, or I start a beat and I say, what do you think of that? This kick, are we trying to go 120 BPM? Because there's certain genres of stuff and there's tempos, you know, so there's sort of a template, you know, so 120 BPM to 126 is sort of house music. You can go, you know, some R&B stuff like at 90, dance hall, 96, you know, so it depends on the genre we're going. I start to build it that way. And then we get the melody first. So the music, sort of the production, and then a melody on top of the production. And then from the melody, you start to hear some words formulate. And then from the words, you're like, okay, but I need a super crazy title. I need something unique. I need something different that no one's ever said. I need to put two words together. You got to figure something else that's super unique. This is exactly what I do with my artists now, you know, because they don't have the, you know, knowledge like I do. And I'm like, they're like, yeah, but this song is amazing. I'm like, yeah, but the title is lacking.
So let's talk about that. Yeah. You created Lone Wolf Entertainment?
Lone Wolf Entertainment.
And you...
And 4AM Vibes Records.
Okay.
That's the new label.
That's the new label.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Lone Wolf, you manage artists under it, and you also produce music, of course. But so walk us through that, because I feel like that's a huge thing nobody talks about. But like I said, like Bruno Mars was songwriter, producer before he, you know, became an artist. And some people do it in reverse. Like Jay-Z has one of the biggest labels on earth now, right? So talk us through that.
It's always sort of a juggle, and it's like a you know, chicken before the egg before the chicken, whatever, cart before the horse or whatever it is. I would say I started off, so I always wanted to be an artist, right? I was like, okay, I want to be out there. I want to be known for my music. You want to, you know, write the songs and be known for the expression that you're putting out there. You know, just there's something gratifying about that.
Right.
But when I was starting off, because no one liked my look or liked me, you know how it is as an actor, you probably get the same thing maybe here and there. Not anymore, but back in the day.
I still do. Still
you know what I'm saying? No, now you prove yourself it's different.
And
me too. It's like, okay, that's an icon or an artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's solidified.
Yeah. You know, but no one can take it away from you. It's a legend. It's a legend you make.
It's
no
on film. Like you can't deny that it doesn't work or work, right?
Yeah.
But they would, and they would say, oh, he doesn't look like an artist. Okay, whatever. So how about, but we love your song. Can you write the song for our artist? You know, we love that song that you sent into the record company, but we don't want it for you. We want it for this girl artist, for example, in Quebec when I was living in Montreal. The artist was Gabrielle. Her name was Gabrielle de Trois Maisons, but it's a French name, Gabrielle. I sent the songs to the record company and they didn't like they loved my voice. They just didn't think I was a star.
They wanted to put her as the face of the song.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll charge you money for it. You know, so cool. So I'm like, okay, so it's a business. So no problem. Here's three songs. Here's, I want, you know, whatever, $2,000 per song. And we did it. And it became, you know, a gold record.
And you get a percentage of the
percentage
song as well.
Of the sales, of course. And I got my first gold record and my first gold, my first award at the Quebec Junos, which is a disc. And it was best sound and mix of the year. And I was like, young guy, first project ever. I'm like, whoa, okay, so I'm sort of good at this. And then so that started snowballing to something else. That's when I started working with Sky. There was a band called Sky.
Yeah.
She's some Canadian kind of band, wonderful right? to me. She's some, that was the song at the time, and I was a fan of theirs.
Yeah.
And one of the guys came up to me and is like, yo, since we produced that album together of that girl, why don't we work on some songs together? And like, because they split up. It was a duo. One of the guys stayed and the other guy just, he hated the business. Yeah, so Antoine, you know, what's up, Antoine? He hit me up and he was like, why don't we start a band? Why don't we try something? So we went in studio, started working together. And that's how it snowballed to that. So I was part of Sky. And Sky started touring with Sean Desmond at the time.
Wow.
So that's how I met Sean Desmond. And then just everything snowballed that way, you know? So there was so many behind the scenes things. Even as a producer, songwriter, I was working in parallel and making money that way, because I wasn't making money as an artist or singing anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's not where the money is. Performance is not where it's at. Both is where it's at.
If you
can really peak both at full throttle, of course you're killing it. Taylor Swift nailed it, right? But
so she's doing producing as well?
She's writing. So songwriting And
but she's probably got ghostwriters, no?
But she writes, man.
She does write.
She does write.
She does write. Okay, yeah. Okay.
And songwriting is everything. So that's where I made a lot of money from, songwriting.
Not music producing.
And music producing. So both. But songwriting is sort of, it's hard to explain, but it's both the same thing.
Okay.
So being a producer, they give you songwriter credits.
Okay.
Okay. Because it means you, that's how you get royalties from associations like SOCAN, which are societies of authors and composers that get money for you and collect it all over the world. It's a whole thing, man. I could explain it forever.
But yeah, yeah.
There was a show through Antoine called Star Academy. It was like the Canadian Idol, but for Quebec.
Right. Hmm.
And he was like, we got to produce this show, you know, the music for the show. Can you help me? I'm like, dude, I'm down. So I made a deal with him for X amount of dollars to produce it. And so I started making money that way. That album went 5 times platinum in Quebec.
Holy crap.
500,000 albums. 5 times platinum. Crazy. Crazy, where it was 100,000 each album, 500,000.
So you've gone platinum before, but as correct. A producer,
gold,
lots.
No, no, so gold with Gabrielle, platinum with Gabrielle as well, and an award. Star Academy, 500,000, 5 times platinum. They asked me to do the next album, 3 times platinum. They asked me to do the album after that, 2 times platinum. I started making money from producing and songwriting before I even became an artist.
Wow.
But this is where it changed for me. Hmm. There was a concert for Star Academy at the Bell Center in Montreal. 20,000 people. My song was the single. It was called Je veux changer le monde. I want to change the world. That was the song that I wrote, and then we translated it in French. And that was their single. They were performing it that night. I had the laminated pass. I could go backstage, but I wanted to watch it with the fans. I was there. You know, they were singing the song. The finale comes on. It's my song. The whole stadium stands up, sings the song. I'm watching kids, everybody singing my song. And I'm like, and they don't know it's me. I'm here, this speck, this Lebanese speck, nobody cares about. In
the
Canada,
the Zatar
with olive oil on top of his head. But no one knows. In Canada, and the whole stadium is roaring. The song that I wrote in my room.
Wow.
Goosebumps all over me, and I was sad. I was like, wow, nobody knows me. I gotta change this. I cannot do this no more. They asked me to produce the next album. I said no. I said, I'm done producing albums. I'm gonna work on Carl Wolf, the first album for Carl Wolf. I produced it. That's what Butterflies was created. It was the first single. And I was signed to Universal, EMI actually, Dubai, with that song. It went gold. That album went gold.
Wow.
The rest is history.
Damn, man. That's amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. And then you found a way to reconcile both now into your life. Right. I mean, that's what's amazing about this is that you really went through an artistic journey with your life, with your art. You know what I mean?
I always knew that one day, when I get older, whatever that looked like, you know, you always envision yourself older as like a Goomba, like from, what are they called? The Goombaya from the...
Like Willy Wonka?
Willy Wonka, the Goombas, what are they called?
Oompa Loompas.
Like you envision small head, big body, like that. Yeah. That's how I envisioned myself when I was a kid, like that I would be older. But I always knew that I'd be a producer. I knew that was where it was going. Like if I can't do this no more and I'm too old to do it, I'll always be a songwriter, producer, and that makes even more money. So I'm good to go on that level. I'm secured, nothing's secured.
Yeah, but
at least if I get my mind and I keep my mind right and my physical right, you know, then we'll be okay.
Yeah, it's funny, man. It's a whole I started my production company a few years ago, and I think that was the whole reason I started it too. It's just the business savvy part of it and being passionate about that, because I'm passionate about that.
And you're knowledgeable.
Too.
You can help.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's tons of artists who are young that have no clue, you know, and I'm a guy who's from this time as well. I'm not just from the past. I'm still sort of current, man.
Oh, dude.
I'm putting stuff out. I'm performing with Kid Laroi in Dubai on my birthday, April 18th.
Amazing.
April 19th, actually, for Dubai.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
So Kid Laroi is a new artist. Like he's with Justin Bieber. And like, so we're you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm putting out
singles. No, man, I don't want to tell people how old you are, but
they 29 is not that old.
Yeah, dude.
Calm down.
They would have, you know, they'd be shocked. Okay, the last thing I want to finish off on, I want to talk, because I'm really interested in this. And like I said, I struggle with it. But I want to talk about where you think TikTok and Instagram and all these platforms play. Yeah. I
lately I've been having this conversation with people. You know when you, and you might not know this, again, this is my business savvy. You know when you buy a stock or you see a stock go up so high and you're like, it's not going to go keep going higher. There's right. no way. Like it's going to crash. Bro. It has to crash. Like NVIDIA. Everybody's talking about NVIDIA.
Bitcoin today and yesterday has been stressing me out. I sold 3 days ago.
Oh, dude, I sold a little bit months ago, so you should be stressed.
I sold at 72,000 Canadian. It's at 80.
Oh, Canadian, because I don't know what the
Canadian is. It's at 80 now.
Yeah, I don't know what
and
the Canadian
And it just went up one day. Yeah. I'm like, come on,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, it'll come back
so, yeah,
down. And,
so I get you.
And so you get me. Yeah. But that's what I've been thinking about TikTok and Instagram. I'm like, because I struggle so much with, I need to be better on social media. I need to be better. And then a part of me is like, dude, it's reached its peak. Like, there's going to be something else. There has to be something else coming. This has reached its peak. So... tell me your thoughts on TikTok and social media, especially music, because TikTok, I mean, that's the music platform.
So it changes, and it's ever changing. The whole landscape always changes for us as musicians. They pick and choose the algorithm. You know, it's really interesting. Things that are work that used to work for me don't work for me anymore. Why? Is it because it's boring? We've seen you, Carl, do these late night things, or is it the music that you're doing is not interesting, or is it? You know, it was always TikTok has always been that platform that I had to find what sticks. And I like it because it's so true and it's so primal. Right. It's so primal. It's like, if it's funny, I'm watching it and I'm sharing it with my friends. If it's not funny, bro, move.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of funny and there's a lot of cool and there's a lot of, you know, good music and a lot of good vocals, you know, but if it's really working, you will know. I sort of love that. I like being held to the fire. I don't like to, oh, this was easy. Allah, let's milk it to the max.
Right.
I think that keeps me lazy. And I think it's fun that way. And I think that's all that's happening. I think it's going to stay. I think Reels is picking up, really doing well. It's trying to
Instagram.
Catch up. Yeah. It's trying to catch up on TikTok. And they're giving you, you know, they're giving us the views and the love that way. They're sharing it beyond your network.
Right.
Remember how it used to be always, they'll just share it to your friends.
Yes.
Now it's being shared beyond your network, which is very TikTok-ish about
okay,
it.
Okay, okay.
So I think they're here to stay. Obviously, there's always going to be something that comes out, but we got to keep our... I'm really good at that. I'm really in tune with what's sort of popping off.
Right.
Because I go with it. I'm not one of those guys that's, you know, if someone mentions something, by the way, let's be on this and let's be on that. And I'm like, I'm not in the mood for it. No, I kind of like...
Let's do it.
I go, I take the plunge. Even though I don't know what the hell I'm doing in it, I just take the plunge because human beings, we're very resilient and we'll figure it out.
Right.
Man.
Like TikTok was that way. Awesome. I couldn't, you know... It was Chris Fade from Dubai Bling. Okay. You know, I don't know if you guys watch the show.
Anyway, Dubai Bling, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Fade, good friend of mine. It's his birthday, by the way. Happy birthday. It was him and Gary Vee both told me, you got to get in. You would kill on TikTok. I'm like, man, I don't know, man. What am I going to do? Dances and shit. Like, it's not my vibe. You know, like, by the way, I did those at the beginning. I was doing,
yeah.
Didn't even notice. Dance. Man, I was like, get out of here.
We got to put this in the video thumbnail.
You'll find it. You'll find it. I was like, what am I doing? But it stuck. Certain things I started figuring out worked and some things didn't work.
But the late night beat really worked because that's kind of what really popped off.
That
right?
really popped off. There was a couple of things that popped off. My comedy stuff, like my comedy singing and my showing people how I produce stuff. So I always noticed that comedy and music, when you marry them, it's game over. Like comedy's fun. Music is fun, but when you do comedy and music together, Weird Al style, like I take old songs and make them funny, dude, it's like everybody loves it because what you want to be able to do on TikTok essentially is make your content shareable. You want people to go, wow, all those kittens are so cute. Look how they did that. Oh, I want to share it with my girlfriend. I want to share it with my friend.
Right.
You got to find shareable. I tell that to my artists every day. It's so hard. Like she's trying to find, it's one thing for Carl Wolf to, I found my niche and what works. Mm-hmm. It's another thing for my artists to find it. It's a struggle, man.
Yeah.
They can't find it. She's getting 300 views, 1,000 views. Like, and she's thinking that it's just put, you know, sing your song, you know? And like people will like, I'm like, I tell her, Danny, her name is Dan. I'm like, you gotta think of it this way. You gotta make it shareable. Would you share this if you didn't know you?
You, yeah.
We don't know you. We don't care for you. Nobody cares for even Carl Wolf at the time. Nobody gave a fuck, bro. It was like, even though it's Carl Wolf, I had no followers.
Right.
It didn't matter. Content matters. That's the new currency, man. So be striking, be unique, and be cool, and be something that we can share and love. That's really all it's about.
Thanks, man. I love that. Yeah. Guys, these nuggets are amazing.
I know, man. Nuggets.
Definitely, I've never thought about it that way. You're right. Because I feel like that's a whole new world of
Listening
a
at
whole
it.
New world.
Maybe, I wish yeah. Are you gonna do
Dude,
it?
The moment you started singing, I was like, "Damn it, we messed up. We didn't bring a piano. We should have
brought a piano. I would have." I can show you the world.
There
I
you love go, it. Man. Oh, man. Oh man!
Shining, shimmering. I mean, I even made a funny. Did you ever see that?
I don't know if I saw a funny.
The Corona
one.
World.
I might have seen this.
Are you
right?
kidding me?
And
that
2020.
Was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Corona world.
Can you sing "Welcome to Growth Untold"?
Yeah,
just sing
yeah.
it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, dude, he'll do something yeah, yeah. sick.
So it's a Growth Untold.
Yeah, just
podcast.
make a melody
yeah, yeah.
with
something
it.
For us right now.
Welcome to Growth Untold. Yeah.
yes. That's there better we than go. What we got right now.
No auto-tune needed.
Yeah,
no.
Honestly. I love it. No, Carl, you've got an amazing man. Voice. Yeah.
Thank
and
you.
I think more than that, you've just got a beautiful soul.
Thank you, bro.
And
appreciate
such a
you.
Young the output on life. Seriously, yeah. man. You're like, I'm chilling with you, and I'm like, oh, this guy's like, you know, we're like two 20-year-olds chilling in the backyard.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like,
that's a vibe, bro.
That's
a
how
vibe.
I feel.
That's a vibe.
That's how I feel, bro. I don't even, I think my parents are wrong. They're lying. They yeah, gotta be lying somewhere.
Your birth certificate. What the hell is that
something
all about?
Off about that. Because I don't feel it. I don't. But no one does, right?
I
Nobody
think most
really
a
does,
lot of
yeah.
artists, especially when you find something you love to do, you just feel young, right?
Yeah.
That's what all the blue zones are all about. The blue zones where people live to 100. It's like they just that's one of the pillars is find something you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life.
I think stress is what killed my uncle. If you know it's I look at adults sometimes, you know, even friends of mine, you know. I'm like, man, because stress is the killer, right? That's where you're rich. If you're just doing you and not being stressed, they don't teach you that in school. It's unfair because that's everything. So why aren't you teaching us to live longer?
Yeah.
Why aren't you teaching us that life is worth living if you do everything that you love?
Yeah. I'm into that, man. Man, yeah. I think that's a great note to end it on. I mean, that's amazing. Thank you so much
Holy
for your
crap.
Time.
Thanks, brother.
And yeah, if you guys don't know Carl Wolf, check him out on TikTok, on Instagram, on Spotify, on anywhere where music plays, basically.
Man, you find this guy everywhere.
Yeah, huh? You can find yeah. him everywhere. He's amazing. YouTube everywhere. And, you know, for the younger generation,
right.
I'm sure you have listened to Africa.
Well, their mom has.
But if you haven't, your mom has for sure. And so... Check it out. Check out Carl Wolf. Yeah. Thank you so much, man. It was so nice meeting you for the first time. And this won't be the last time. We got to bring you back and bring a fucking piano because I feel
yes.
I feel stupid that I didn't bring a piano.
You should have brought
been
it.
So perfect.
It'll, next time. So we got something to look forward to.
There you go.
My man. Brother, respect.
Thanks, man. Yes, this sir. Is amazing,
amazing,
dude. Amazing. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
Thanks for tuning in and listening. Please subscribe, share, and join the journey of Growth Untold. Don't miss a single nugget. Hit that follow button now on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and Instagram.